Hello there.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Hello there. Welcome to a podcast about Star Wars Shatterpoint and the Star Wars universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mon Khusro. How are we doing today, Mon?
I'm doing good, man. You know, just out here trying to... It's just business. Just trying to get some business done.
Honest business. That's what we're talking about today. We are getting into more of the scum and villainy in the Star Wars galaxy and talking about one of our most famous modern era scum and villainy characters, Hondo Inaka. I mean, what's not to love about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's like the scummiest dude that you'll ever meet, but you just can't help but like him. He's very charismatic. He's very cunning. And I think deep down, he does have a heart of gold, but I think he's blinded by his greed.
Yeah, maybe in another life, Han Solo could have ended up on this path. So it's that type of thing where we adore Star Wars because it gives us layers of characters and layers of professions in the galaxy. And a lot of that started with Hondo and Lando, right? And then we saw the bounty hunters. Then it's like Hondo, Lando, bounty hunters. And then we build on top of that. And now we're all the way in modern day and we have characters like Hondo, which provide a lot of nuance in that world. So we're going to be talking about that for sure today and how Hondo is in Star Wars Shatterpoint, which is going to be exciting. But before we do that, we do have some people to thank.
Absolutely. Hello There is supported by our patrons, and our patrons support Hello There at patreon.com/HelloThereCast. We have two new patrons this week. We've got George at the Padawan Acolyte tier. George is actually one of my co-hosts from Path to Glory and hung out with us all Adepticon long. And now that he won his world qualifier event for Underworlds, he is now playing Shatterpoint until he has to start practicing for that, which is not till around October. So a lot of Shatterpoint that he's going to get in. Super excited. And then, of course, we've got Iceman, who is actually Godliness's brother, and he made top table at the Adepticon premiere event as well. So both of them at the Padawan Acolyte tier. Glad to have both of these world-class players in our Patreon to continue to talk with us in Discord and, of course, get some really high-level games in as well and continue to improve the pedigree of the Hello There leagues. We've got some insane players there.
Absolutely. It's only getting tougher and tougher. It's also what you said, Amon. Beskar sharpens Beskar, iron sharpens iron. We're just going to keep growing as a community together, and I'm really looking forward to that. So excited to have you guys on. And of course, the quick refresher for the Patreon is if you join our Patreon, you get immediately added into the Discord and you get access to all these behind the scenes things, bonus episodes of the podcast and our leagues. So if that's something you're interested in, check out the Patreon tiers. And we got to shout out to people that get a shout out every week because they are producers of the show, starting with our producer, Commander Red Wolf. Thank you so much. And then our ultimate producers, Sith Emperor Kevin, Grandmaster Griffin, Daimyo Matt, Bounty Hunter Brady, and Grand Moff Matt. Thank you, producers team.
What a squad.
What a squad. Absolutely. Watch out, like we said before, these guys on the field. All right, Amon, let's get right into our lore today with Hondo Inaka and the Weequays. Starting with the Weequays, who are they? Well, I'm glad you asked. They are a sentient species from the planet Sreeler. And what's interesting about them is they had this thick, leathery reptile type skin that made them really resistant to weather, especially desert environments and even blaster fire. The Weequays, just through their history and through where they've ended up in the galaxy, they tend to lean towards pirates, bounty hunters, mercenaries, bodyguards, and they work with the Hutt clan a lot. Most notably, they just are fully locked in with all the Hutt regions of the galaxy and do work for them. Weequays are people who typically kept their hair long, which is a cultural thing they have. And then sometimes they grew horns or bumps out of their face, which varied from Weequay to Weequay. And they had a really nice spectrum of hair colors, skin colors, eye colors. So they're pretty diverse people. And the fact that they're just all over the Star Wars galaxy and they're always taking work.
Yeah, Weequays are super interesting. I mean, you mentioned their skin makes them resistant to blaster fire, cuts, blunt trauma, things like that. And because they are just more denser than the average human, it just adds their durability and their resilience as well. Now, there's a lot of information on Weequays, and a lot of that information bleeds between canon and legends. So it's hard to differentiate what it is that is still canon and what is not. However, I think some cool things that I have learned about Weakways over the years. I just love to share. Whether it ends up being officially canon or it stays in Legends, we'll see. But I think it's just a really cool insight into the Weakway people and their culture. So Weakways have this extraordinary ability, actually, to communicate with members of their own clan by exuding pheromones. Now, these pheromones are very complex, right? And they're so complex that this, let's call it pheromonal language, could not only not be understood by other species, but also other Weakways from other clans. So it was a very intimate form of communication, which was super, super interesting. And this isn't like having full conversations. This is like maybe danger or intent or safety or love or trust, right? These are very interesting characteristics. Now, this is where I think it blends a little bit more into Legends, because in Legends, Weakways rarely spoke full sentences, but then in the Clone Wars, you see them having full-blown conversations. But sometimes that was done on purpose so that their foes, especially humans who are very arrogant, would mistakenly believe them to be stupid or unintelligent, right? And to underestimate them when in fact you should be overestimating them.
Absolutely great input, Aman. Yeah, I love the pheromone stuff, because I hope that comes up again in the future if we get certain other alien races, because there's a couple more in the Star Wars galaxy that definitely kind of speaks to, most notably the Fallen, which is part of the Shadow Collective, and really hoping we get to something like that in the future. But time will tell, Shatterpoint. But yeah, I think it's super cool, because once again, we're in the world of Star Wars and our world and how it evolves over time. And of course, the Weakways did not talk in the original trilogy at all. And then, you know, they were just these hardened guards of Jabba and the mercenaries of the galaxy. And then obviously, now we're all the way to Hondo, who's one of the characters who talks the most in all of Star Wars.
Exactly. And it's interesting because, you know, those particular Weakways we saw in older forms of Star Wars were perhaps just a clan that was seldom spoken, right? That doesn't mean they're representative of the entire race. But there's also one thing that you mentioned, which was that they had this long hair.
Yes.
So, again, not really sure if this bleeds into Legends or not, but they would tie their hair into these long braids because Weakways would actually create separate braids of hair for each year they spent away from their home planet as a tribute to their homeworld. And then when they returned back to their homeworld, they ended up shaving their braids. Now, again, the Weakways we see with Hondo and his crew, many of them don't have hair. Some of them are bald. And so we don't know if that's a particular clan that does that, or maybe it is the norm and Hondo's crew is just a group of people who don't care to abide by traditions and culture.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense for them, and it is absolutely very interesting. And also, it could be one of those things where it started in the Weakway culture that way, and it just continued. They all just continue to keep their hair long. Some of them have long braids more in like a ponytail style, and other ones have long braids that kind of go all around. And if you notice, in canon, Hondo's hair changes over time too. Now in the New Republic era, which, you know, we wonderfully have content of Hondo in the New Republic era because we have the Star Wars Disney Park, Galaxy's Edge, and Batu, where Hondo's all over the place as an actor and an animatronic. He's kind of let all of his hair just go more traditional, just down, right? And he's no longer doing the long braids. He's just doing kind of a middle part long hair situation. So yeah, it's very fascinating. And, you know, we're going to get a lot more Weakway discussion today, but it's important to know them before we get into Hondo's lore himself, because he is the most famous Weakway in the entire galaxy.
That's right. Now, you also mentioned that Weakways worked a lot for the Hutts,
yes,
which is super interesting, as bodyguards and as mercenaries. So in addition to working as foot soldiers for the Hutt cartel, they also, as Jesse mentioned, the Shadow Collective and the Black Sun as well, which is super interesting. But what I find the most interesting is that there were, in fact, Weakways who were Force sensitive and, in fact, were members of the Jedi Order, which is very, very fascinating, and one that I think could maybe bring future synergies to the Weakway keyword and maybe align them with Republic in the future if AMG chooses to take that route. And because the first thing that I do when I look up any species is I say, what are the Jedi in that species, right? Because that's just interesting to me. Like, is a culture, is a race Force sensitive? And so there was a Jedi Knight, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but Qumars Redath Gom, who fought and died in the Battle of Geonosis. There was a Jedi Master Kosex, who fought and died in the First Battle of Kamino. Jedi Master Tyr also died during the Battle of Thustra. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, the battle of Thustra was in the early stages of the Clone Wars, and it was essentially the Galactic Republic and the Sephi people who seceded to the Separatists, which was very interesting. And then, of course, last but not least, we have a Jedi Master, Sora Bulk, who actually ended up betraying the Jedi Order and became one of Count Dooku's dark acolytes, which was super interesting. And then there was also another Jedi General named Sev, who was killed during Order 66. So actually, yep, a fairly healthy amount of weakways in the Jedi Order. I think we just named five or six, with one of them even displaying dark side affiliations. So very cool.
Absolutely very cool. Yeah, and Sora Bulk, I mean, he had important stuff in Clone Wars, right? And things like that. And even if he's in the background a lot, it's just super cool to see weakways even present in places as high as the Jedi Council in the galaxy, right? And the last little bit about the weakways, I did mention their planet, Sri Lur, which was a desert planet I mentioned, which their skin was totally adapt to, and they evolved to be on that planet. But the most important part about Sri Lur, and I think the connection of the weakways with the Hutts, is the Hutts, when they started getting more power over the, you know, decades and decades that they've been taking over, they conquered this world. And that's kind of how the weakways got fully locked in with the Hutts, because the Hutts essentially made a lot of the weakways slaves, and they made a lot of the weakways bodyguards and mercenaries. And that was the initial point of the Hutt weakway story. And obviously that's expanded on more later. But I find that so interesting because I think they're already a down and out people to start, because these people that are in power, which is the Hutts exert their power on people in lower circumstance. And the weakways are no different from like the people of Tatooine and stuff in that way, right? I mean, there's a lot of Hutt power and crime controlling and oppressing the people of different systems, and their system was one of them.
The last thing I want to add, Jesse, is what I really enjoyed about the weakways is that they, first of all, like in a lot of Star Wars culture, they keep pets, right? And so
of course, you'll
talk about his Kowakian monkey lizard in a little bit. But what I really enjoy about the weakways is when I was watching the Clone Wars, you very rarely see Indian influence in a lot of cultures. And so while I certainly don't want to say that the weakways are based off any sort of indigenous people or a country or a way of life, I think what I found really interesting is that in an episode in the Clone Wars, when Obi-Wan and Anakin are quote unquote partying with the weakways, who love to party, they know how to party, the song that consistently plays in the background is actually sampled from a Hindi song, a pop song. And when I was listening to it as a kid, I was like, whoa, like I just love like a little tidbits of culture that I can associate with just thrown in there, not for any purpose, but to make it just sound unique and maybe alien in nature to the English viewer, right? The majority of the viewers who are speaking English and come from maybe an American lens and an English lens. So I thought that was really fascinating and just nice little tidbit that I will always remember, because that was like, oh, cool.
I think it's amazing. No, absolutely. That's one of the best parts about Star Wars, right? Where we pull from our existing world, right? And then they obviously expand on it, change it, things like that. Yeah, absolutely adore that. And there is a lot of cool Indian culture all throughout Star Wars, right? And little tidbits here and there. I mean, look at some of Queen Padme Amidala's, some of her formal dress, right? It was directly inspired and said so by the costume designer, by Asian cultures and Indian formal dress and stuff. So I love that type of stuff. So, I mean, it goes all the way to like the gaffy stick of the Tusken Raiders, one of my favorite real life things. The gaffy stick is a real life weapon called the Totokia, which is a weapon of the Fiji people and Aboriginal people. And what's super cool about that is when Temora got to use that weapon in the Book of Boba Fett. I mean, those are some of his ancestors, right? So it's this really full circle thing where you're like, we somehow tied like the real life lore to things like that. And when they do that, hats off to the creators that can do that, right? So very interesting, the weakways. They are multicultural and multidimensional people, and see them all over the Star Wars galaxy. You're always going to see them. I think they're one of the main races we see since the original trilogy, and that's pretty cool as well.
100%.
Let's talk about Hondo Ohnaka himself, who is the most famous weakway in the galaxy. Of course, he was a male weakway pirate. He was an outlaw, a smuggler, a pirate. His exploits varied across the entire galaxy. Any way he could make money, notoriety, he would do it. He had decades and decades long career. Of course, he was the gang leader of the Ohnaka gang and Ohnaka Transport Solutions. And he frequently was involved in all aspects of the galaxy during certain times, right? So whether it's the Clone Wars, whether it's the original trilogy timeline or whether it's the New Republic era, he's always finding a way to be involved, to get paid, to get notoriety. And what that means is he'll do what needs to be done to make whatever allegiances, because he is a true pirate, right, Amon? I mean, a pirate does what a pirate needs to do to survive. But let's talk about who Hondo was in his early life. And I laid the groundwork this a little bit with the Hutts taking over the Weequay planet. But early in his life, Hondo was not treated well by his parents. Him and his mom actively did not get along. And his parents sold him into slavery. Now, the stories vary from legends and canon. They said they were offering him as a offering to the Weequay god. But later in life, Hondo surmised that it might have been more just about money and then making ends meet. But either way, his parents sold him. And this kind of laid the groundwork for Hondo's life. This is very similar to Han's story, right? Where Han is in servitude of a gang leader. And that's what Hondo did in early life. He was a slave, servitude to a Hutt, Porla the Hutt. And eventually, Hondo worked his way up, worked his way around, learned a lot of things, and made his way out. He stole things from the Hutt when he got older, stole a skiff, got out, stole weapons, and then became a leader of runaways and started his piracy smuggler career. I just find that really interesting. He has a lot of the same seeds I mentioned as Han Solo, and Han Solo could have maybe gone a different way. Orphaned, and then being forced to work for a crime syndicate of sorts, right? And then taking matters in his own hand and escaping, right? And essentially always having that kind of notoriety, but also, like, in a way, a price on his head, because news travels, right? And people know. So I assume Hondo shed this hunt for him when he got older, but for a long time, you can't just escape the Hutts, right? And we've seen that in Star Wars canon. They will always find a way to track you down, or you're always just on their bad list. So, but I think we have that leads to the important part of today is he started the Anaka gang, which was a very cool pirate gang that Hondo started from the ground up, and they found their way to the planet Furana, which is where we see basically Hondo's debut in Clone Wars. What are your thoughts, Amon, on the Anaka game as a whole? Because this is like the bulk of what Hondo does, is this leader of this group of ragtag pirates.
Yeah, I find it to be quite fascinating because at his core, like, Hondo is someone who has experienced a traumatizing upbringing. And as you mentioned earlier, the Weequay people are people that almost exude this energy of their down and out. They are set in an environment where most things are not offered to them, and they have to scrap and fight and often step on top of one another to get to where they need to go, which is really unfortunate. And I find that Hondo, the exuberant, extravagant, loquacious, overconfident, charming fellow that he portrays himself to be, while inherently that is Hondo, it is also someone who is probably masking a lot of that pain and that fear and that rejection maybe that he felt when he was younger. But for sure, I think he also channels that into a sense of family as well, which I also find to be quite interesting because he does take care of his gang to a certain extent.
To a certain extent, yeah.
Right? Like if there is a situation where he has to trade one of his gang members up so that he can get away, he will 100% always, always, always make that trade. And he'll just always tell you, it's just business, right? It's not personal. And I believe that. He is a survivor. I mean, he had to, right? He comes from a race of survivors. He comes from a culture of survivors. So in a way, I can empathize with a lot of decisions he makes. It's unfortunate that a lot of the times when he is, quote unquote, double-crossing people or betraying them or changing the terms of a deal on the fly, that it's with popular characters that we know and love, such as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker and Ahsoka Tano, right? And then later on, which we won't talk about that version of Hondo, but the Rebels crew as well, right? Because let's not forget, Hondo is very old by the time he passes away. In fact, he has not passed away yet technically in canon.
No.
Hondo is alive throughout the entire Skywalker saga, prequels, original trilogy, and sequel trilogy.
Yes.
And he has met all the major characters at some point in time, including Rey later on, which I think is completely fascinating. But I actually forgot that I read this comic, and I just remembered that it came back to me. But there is this series that are designed for younger audiences, but it was just a quick read, and they're called the Flight of the Falcon series. And it's these series of smaller comic books that essentially all have a common theme, which is the Millennium Falcon, right? And so this one is called The Pirate's Price. And this is where Hondo is essentially regaling his experiences with the Millennium Falcon with that Han Solo guy, that villain Obi-Wan Kenobi and Chewie, as he calls these people. And he says that the Falcon is his favorite ship in the entire universe, in the entire galaxy, which is amazing. And you actually get a lot of insights into Hondo and his personality traits as well. Hondo is someone that he labels himself as saying he has been all of those things and more. When anyone, someone says that he is a thief, a pirate, an opportunist, or a rogue, obviously we all know that his confidence is legendary. It's insane. I think some of my favorite moments from Hondo, I think I have three or four, because I was just trying to think about all the times I saw Hondo in the show. And so one of the first times we see him in the Clone Wars is when actually Hondo captures Count Dooku, Anakin, and Obi-Wan, trying to just get this massive profit off these figures, all three of these essentially pivotal characters in the Clone Wars. And while holding Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Dooku's hostages, he shares one of these life lessons from his mother, where she says, having one hostage is good, two is better, and three, well, that's just good business.
There it is again, the good business.
Right. And so it's just a reminder that even though Hondo does have a good heart, at the end of the day, he is still a businessman and, of course, a pirate at his core, which I think that example right there is just a perfect Hondo example of who he is, right? And keep in mind, he has worked alongside Anakin and Obi-Wan, right? He has worked beside Ahsoka. And there's this really cool example where in one of the Clone Wars episodes, he is actually planning to sell Ahsoka and some Force-sensitive younglings to the highest bidder. And then he ends up getting attacked by General Grievous. And so then Ahsoka, being the kind-hearted and great person she is, ends up allying with the younglings and actually helps Hondo escape after he gets captured by General Grievous. And as a thank you, because he is a big softy, he actually helps one of the younglings complete their first lightsaber. I don't know if you remember that episode, but I thought it was a real wholesome moment.
Great shout outs. He is a very complex character in that way, right? Because he will sell you out. He'll sell out his best friend at the drop of a hat. But also, it's funny. I think he, in a way, it is all business to him. But I also think he's, like Kylo Ren says, he struggles with that pull to the light. Because I feel like he... And we see that more in his later career, which we're not going to talk about today, in the Rebels timeline and then the New Republic era, especially, right? Where he does become more of a good guy. He does become better. But I think it's the seeds of it are in Clone Wars, right? You see him being pulled to help people. He's like, I should leave, but you know what I mean? That's what we love. That's what we love about characters like Han Solo and Lando Calrissian, right? Where you see them at their grimmest, but then you see them, their moral compass kick in, and then I got to go save this kid or whatever, right? And then that's what makes me love these type of characters, these scruffy nerf herders, as Leia calls them, right? These scoundrels, because they're nuanced. They're nuanced. And Hondo's probably the most nuanced.
He really is. And again, you know, before his mother threw him out, he says things like... You know, the galaxy is a rough place, and his mother taught him that we must all learn to take care of ourselves. And I think Hondo takes that to a T. He's always prioritizing himself. But I think, you know, as you mentioned, while he struggles to be pulled to the light, he nonetheless is being pulled to the light. And in The Pirate's Price, he mentions that being a pirate is noble. He refers a lot to this concept of having pirate's honor. And I like to equate it to, there's a very common theme in a lot of media, which is like, honor of thieves type of situation, right? Where you want to be honorable when you want to, but you can turn it off when you need to, because at the end of the day, you're a thief or a pirate, right? So more often than not, as you mentioned, when you see glimpses of that in the Clone Wars, it's because he's generally helping someone because he sees the long game. There's an angle where it can benefit him in the future. Or sometimes he just really feels like it, because Hondo also has a soft spot for underdogs, because he is an underdog.
He absolutely is an underdog. And yeah, he's got a soft spot for a lot of that. And as you alluded to earlier, Mon, not only does he team up with all these main characters of the Star Wars story, but he teams up with a lot of the secondary characters of the Star Wars story. People like you mentioned Ezra and the Rebels crew, but I mean, all the way to, he has run-ins with Chirrut Inwe. He teams up with IG-88. He has an often on-again, off-again relationship with Aura Singh. He's intertwined all over the place because he is malleable, because he's not light, he's not dark. He is a true pirate. He has no allegiance. And that's what they play with in the Star Wars universe with canon with him, and they have a fun time doing it.
Yeah, and you mentioned Aura Singh, which I love that. If you want to learn more about Aura Singh and the Cad Bane box, you can refer to Hello There episode 23, where you can hear all of that information and how they play in Star Wars Shatterpoint. But the last thing I want to add, and this is this last anecdote from the Clone Wars, is he's with Plo Koon when they arrive on Florum. Essentially, he tells Plo Koon, we're walking into a trap, and that the assassin, bounty hunter, legendary Aura Sing, she's waiting for them at the bar. And Hondo makes it emphatically clear that he has nothing to do with whatever she has planned, but he just knows that something's going to happen. And he lets Plo know, which I think is actually quite admirable, right? Again, there is a little bit of honor there. You could also call it, maybe I know my ex-girlfriend, and I know what she gets up to, and I don't want to be involved in that. But at the end of the day, I find that to be actually a very fascinating thing, because it's just the way he delivers the line, like the voice actor is amazing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute, But it's just insane. No, good shout out. And I also think too, Amon, he is totally keeping all options open, right? Where it's, I know Aura, so if this goes in Aura's favor, I can go that way. And also I gave Plo a heads up, right? So if this goes that way, I can run with him. So I think he's always looking to find an out. And like you said, he's a survivor. So it makes a lot of sense. Now, closing out our Hondo lore, we would not be Hondo lore without his trusty pet, Pick Muck Muck, the Kaiwakian monkey lizard. Every pirate's got to have a parrot. In this case, you've got to have a parrot, lizard, monkey on your shoulder. And of course, we love the pop culture reference of the creature on the shoulder of the pirate captain, right? But at the same time, Hondo was very close with Pick Muck Muck. Pick Muck Muck also was trained by Hondo to help in his schemes. Frequently, he could pickpocket people, could get missions done, whatever needed to be done, he could do it because he was a monkey that was a survivor as well. And what's interesting is we don't know how Hondo loses Pick Muck Muck, but at one point in the future, in the further timeline, he says that he never truly appreciated Pick Muck Muck as much as he should have and told him enough how much he appreciated him until he was gone. And so you lose a pet and you're like thinking about all the time you had with them. And Hondo's, I might have taken advantage of him a little bit, my pet. And I just think it's an interesting layer because Pick Muck Muck is on this miniature. It's the first time we've got a Hondo miniature in the Star Wars gaming world that has his pet on him. And I just absolutely love the attention to detail that AMG did here because his monkey lizard is always with him. And he's just as much a character, right? He's a smart pet. So that is Hondo's lore today. And I think we go on and on and on. But once again, Amon, our show is a snapshot of characters, the snapshots that AMG gives us. And that's the Clone Wars snapshot of Hondo, which is what we got today.
Absolutely, Jesse. And you're right. We could keep going on and on because honestly, that would mean good business for us. But we have to move forward and talk about Hondo, honest businessman in Star Wars Shatterpoint. Now, Hondo is a primary unit with 7 strike points available to his team, and he comes with 2 force. He has a stamina of 9, a durability of 3, and the tags mercenary, scoundrel, and of course, weak way.
It all makes sense. Right out the gate, him bringing 7 and 2 force worries me. And not in a bad way necessarily, just in a, I'm aware, I'm cognizant of this, and I will always be aware of these 2 things.
I think that's valid. And I think we'll see as to maybe some of the decisions that were made behind that while going through his card, of course. But I struggle when I see 7 now, because we have characters like General Grievous, Moff Gideon, Lord Maul, who are all 8 strike points. And so I'm thinking, man, if they're 7, they have to really put a really big output onto the battlefield. And it's not just necessarily what that perfect scenario top potential is. It's, are they consistently able to perform at the level of a 7? So I'm very curious to see how we see that on the battlefield. And luckily, you know, the both of us were able to get a couple games in with Hondo. So I think we'll have some better anecdotes that we can share. But let's get into this first ability here where that's just good business. That was the worst Hondo impression. But you should definitely keep that in. This is a tactics ability. At the start of this unit's activation, refresh a force for each active objective controlled by another player.
I love this. This is an amazing tactic, but requires you to do good business, right? Requires you to trigger at the right time. So maybe you reserve Hondo and wait for the moment where you're down on points, right? You're down on points, but you're getting paid more in force. And I think it's very cool.
Yeah. Not only is it when you're down, though, but this is ability that I think starts to stack as the game continues. And I think what this is allowing you to do is this is just letting you allow to play loose and fast with your force. So you only have 2 force with Hondo, which is a little bit unfortunate, but let's say you pair him with a primary that brings 4 force or a primary that brings 3 force. Well, you've got an inherent disadvantage again because Hondo is still bringing 2, right? So most primaries bring 3, so you'll be at 5. let's say you've got some expensive abilities. Well, this will allow you to be able to use them more often because you can bank Hondo with a reserve, right? Which will then maybe only net you one less force. Or maybe you draw him later in your order deck, or you choose to Shatter Point with Hondo. And you're like, my opponent has 2 points. I have 2 points. We're alternating on the third point. Well, maybe I can refresh 2 force, which will then allow maybe my Obi-Wan to deny an attack, or my fifth brother to force repulse, or my ex-trooper who can coordinated fire, insert whatever condition, even though they've taken an injured token, right? Because then I can spend the force because I know I'm going to get it back at least twice in an order deck draw, which, again, isn't something that you should necessarily build your entire strategy around. I certainly think that is not the ideal scenario, but it's just a nice to have because you're like, huh, if I Shatter Point with Hondo, he can maybe get this point back. And then what it allows me to do is I know that these are still in my deck. If I draw one of them later, I can plan for maybe a bigger play, right? That maybe my opponent ruled out because I had already spent the force.
I think that's a great way to look at it, Amon. And then it's a lens you're going to have to always be in when you're playing Hondo. Not that it's a bad thing. It's a good thing. It engages your brain, but it's going to ask a lot of questions of the player playing Hondo. But also, I think getting back to our Luke and Vader 2 conversations, I think his 2 force is deceptive. Now that we've seen this, we know that Hondo is really bringing your team 3, 4, or 5 force, depending on how you're doing in said struggle when Hondo goes, right? I mean, it's the concept of he's bringing 2 plus the amount he's going to net you with this tactic, which is never going to increase in price, right? The tactic. So I like that he's actually bringing you more than 2. It's just not that at first appearance, right? And it also is contingent on when he goes. So maybe you have Shatter Point with him early just to give yourself a bunch of force up front in a struggle, right? And maybe that's a tactic you can employ as well.
Yes. Now that also makes it interesting because it does matter when you draw Hondo a lot.
It does.
Right? So if you Shatter Point again is random draw activation. So if you draw Hondo early and you reserve him, I mean, you'll probably just get that force back later when you eventually activate him. But then now you're a slave to whatever you draw next, right? Like you cannot not play the next card. So it's things to think about. And I think maybe it's worth exploring Hondo pairing with units that have maybe order deck manipulation, which could be interesting as well. Something to think about in the future. But ultimately, it's just good business.
It is just good business. And I think every Hondo player is going to be very aware of the objective decks and how many objectives are online and set objective decks, like that third set, if anything changes with that, or the fact that Sabotage Showdown has 6 active in Struggle 1, as opposed to the 5 that Shifting Priorities does. And I think all this matters to the Hondo player, and they need to be aware of all this, because that's how they're getting their money. That's how they're getting their force economy, right? So they need to be aware on how to play on those things. And maybe they lean, I think innately, Amon, maybe they just lean towards the objective sets that have more objectives online in a given struggle by default.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of the lens that people have been viewing Hondos thus far, and again, some of it has been quite critical, is because you're looking at him on Shifting Priorities and Sabotage Showdown. But Never Tell Me the Odds is right around the corner, and that has more objectives than we've ever seen, right?
Yeah.
So depending on how those layouts perform, that's just good business, could be really good business. And like all business, there's layers to it, right? So you got to figure it out and make the best decision you can so that your, for lack of a better term, stock price increases.
Absolutely. No, I think that's just good business. It's an amazing tactic, and I also love that it's just does not matter what squad Hondo's in. It's just good for you. It's not one of those things, move a Republic or things like that, right? It's just, he's just going to work. So find him a spot. And I think this is one of the main reasons you're playing him.
Now, moving on to his first active ability, we have Inspiring Stories. So many of them true.
I love that.
Costs of force. Choose an allied unit. One character in this unit and each character in the chosen unit may dash.
Completely agnostic. Once again, I love it. Hondo will work with whoever he needs to work with. Tags are not an issue for him. This is very powerful. Among these two abilities right out the gate, I think are showcasing why you might want Hondo, especially in a premier grouping, right? Where he can just work with anybody.
Yeah, I can easily see Hondo just being the face of a Republic or a Separatist or a Rebel or Empire shell, right? Where you just throw him on the top. So it's going to look like you're playing some sort of, ooh, what Hondo squad is this? But it's just maybe like what Cad does in Separatist, right? Where it's just a Cad face on a Separatist shell.
No, I love it. And I'm super excited to see how he works with these future Bounty Hunter releases. Do they slot with him and things like that? But I just love that we're two lines in on his card, and both the abilities are not bound to any particular tag.
Right. And then again, this is a great way you can get multiple points swung in your favor in a round, right? I mean, that's how you win Shatterpoint. We've said that many times on the show. But imagine you get two Hondo activations over the course of your order deck. You've refreshed Force, and Hondo gets a dash twice. Maybe two different allied units have dashed. Maybe you've been able to swing a point back with bodies or claim a point that was not contested. Boom, that's 1 point. Hondo goes to get another point, 2 point swing. Maybe over the course of the game, 3 or 4 point swing. It's a pretty big deal. And so not to be underestimated. And there's no range limit on this as well, which I have to emphasize. It's very strong.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's the best one of these in the game that we have so far because it just has no restrictions and moves the most units in one go without any hoops to jump through.
Next activability is what have we hit? Which is a cost of Force. Choose an enemy unit within range 2. The chosen unit gains pin and strain. Oof. Then, if that unit's order card is in reserve, you can spend a Force to shuffle it into its controlling player's order deck.
Whew.
What do we think about this? Because it's a very interesting ability that I say more often than not, it's primarily just being used to condition stack someone.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think it can really throw a wrench in your opponent's plans, especially when they're quite sensitive to the nature of the draw in their order deck.
For sure, too. You also got to think about it has one more benefit, which is you paid a Force to put something in reserve. I'm paying a Force for that not to matter. Like, for you lost a Force to reserve something that mattered to you, like Anakin. Not only is Anakin going back in the deck, but you're also down. I'll be down a Force for you to be down a Force, right? And so that's part of it as well. So I think in the right hands, this can win games, of course. That's a high explosive use of this. Put Anakin back in the deck. But what other ways could we manipulate the game state with this, Simon?
So I find it to be super interesting. Of course, peeking a little bit ahead here with Hondo's tree, he does have a pin on one of his trees, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This could be a great way to, oh man, I left someone on one. What have we here? And then they just take the pin and they take the damage and they're strained. It means that when they do come back, they still have to have one of those conditions still on them, which is pretty important. I also think pin and strain in conjunction is extremely debilitating in this game. Many scenarios over the course of Adepticon weekend, and we're just using that as an example due to recency, where I had characters or I did that to characters, and when you activate them, it just feels bad. But it's nature of the game, right? What I really like, though, is let's say your opponent is in this really tight situation where they're like, man, you can see them that they're setting up to hope for a certain draw. And so maybe they have a 66% chance, right? 2 out of 3 to draw one of the characters they need to maybe win the struggle or the game. And while you're still relying a little bit on luck here, you can turn that from a 66 to a 50-50. I mean, I take that. If I'm about to lose a game or if I need to win the struggle, I might just say, hey, you know what? I'll do a coin flip to see if you can get the unit you need. What I also find it very interesting is, let's say you pair this with Moff Gideon, right? You're playing Hondo Moff. You have to pay 2 to reserve a character. And then I'm going to spend a 1 to reshuffle it back into your deck. And then now if you draw them again, you have to spend 2. That's 4 force. You're probably not going to do that, right? If you do, then you've got a plan. If you don't, now you have to make a suboptimal activation because you reserve that character in the first place. So there's a lot of layers again. There's a lot of niche scenarios where it's very powerful. And I think there's going to be a lot of times where this is not really going to do much for your opponent. Another example could be when you're playing against Republic, because Republic is a very Force-sensitive team in the sense that they really rely on some good draw activations to get things done. Well, let's say you get an early Anakin or an early Obi-Wan. You see what you can do here. Obi-Wan, of course, can mitigate that a little bit, but you get what I'm saying. That's the main point. Yeah. Mace even, right? You want Vader to go when there's a support he can go beat up on, right? Nope. Try drawing him again. See what happens. So important. You're messing with your opponent's Force economy. The downside to this ability is Hondo has to be within range 2 of an enemy unit. So again, I can see this more as a finisher. Like, I left you on 1 or 2. Maybe you have set conditions on. I've taken you out. You're putting him in harm's way. And now we didn't mention too much that he has a stamina of 9, right?
Yeah.
He's not a very tanky primary. In fact, I was a little surprised he wasn't 10 given that he comes with 7. So we'll see. I mean, 9's not bad, but it's not great either.
No, it's the lower end, right? And seems to be a theme that AMG does with these non-armored, non-Jedi characters quite frequently where, Honda's going to go down, and we'll talk about that when we get to his stance cards, but that is the biggest detriment to this card, Amon, is you'll happily pay a Force to give someone pinned and strained. That's enough, but then you get the bonus if they were in reserve, you get thrown back in the deck, and you make them lose a force that they paid for. That's all great, but it's all contingent on if Hondo's in that engaged range, which is a dangerous place for him to be.
Absolutely. And I definitely could see a play where you shoot someone, you advance, you inspiring stories, maybe double move on to a point. And then now you're within range too because you're contesting a point someone else's, and then you pin and strain them, maybe mess up an order deck. So that's a play pattern that I have used. In fact, it worked pretty well in the moment. But again, you're putting Hondo at risk. And all of these abilities, right? If you notice, they all cost a force, both his active abilities and his reactive ability, which we'll talk about in a moment. So he gets expensive very quick because once he takes that first injured token, he only comes with 2 force, right? So one ability, he's using all the force he brings to your team.
Yep.
But who knows? That might just be good business. So the next ability we're going to go over is a reactive ability, which is this effort is no longer profitable, which is 1 force. When another allied unit within range 4 becomes wounded, this unit may use this ability. One character in this unit may reposition. This character may not end this movement engaged.
Once again, another very good versatile ability that's based on what's happening on the board state, right? There's so many ifs and buts and what ifs and niche situations, like we said, but movement is king in Shatterpoint, right? So this could also win you struggles.
It can, but I think my biggest concern is that you have to make sure that your reposition doesn't move you into an engage range of an enemy character. And that is important because, number one, when you want to get onto a point that might be contested, there might be a tough way to not end up being engaged with the enemy character, right? In order to contest that point. So you're going to have to really think about your angles.
Yeah, that's the tough part of this, right? I mean, it's more just an opportunity. This is not obviously one of Hondo's main play patterns like everything we've talked about thus far. So the last part was very interesting. I'm on the not ending engaged part is very interesting. I'm very curious on that. But, you know, Hondo can set up for struggle 2 or 3. Very thematic as well. Like he's like, this isn't working. We're losing. Let's reposition out of here.
Absolutely. And of course, by the name of the ability itself, like when he's trying to get away, he's not going to want to be near an opponent, right? So thematically, it makes absolute sense. Mechanically, it's a very nuanced ability that I think we have to be smart about. One thing I also want to point out is that if we read the engaged rules in the Star Wars Shatterpoint rulebook, a character is engaged with enemy characters that are within range 2 of it at the same elevation and within line of sight. So you can still be engaged with a character that is wounded or injured as well.
Yes, you can.
Which means that it is an even difficult ability to think about even more because you can't just ignore the fact that people are down. So it makes it a little bit more tougher than what you may think about it in the theater of the mind when you first process it. And then again, you look at it mechanically and you're like, well, still can't go over here, even though technically if I just woof someone to this point, right? Because if your opponent's character is directly on top of the active objective, you cannot get it with Hondo.
Yeah, you just can't.
It's impossible.
Yeah. I definitely think this is his ability that's come up the least, but when it comes up, it might really matter, right? Every little increment in Shatterpoint matters, and this is an incremental thing. So
last but not least, we're going to move on to his identity. Fair? What's fair? When an allied scoundrel character makes an attack as part of a combat action, if the defender is engaged with one or more characters and other allied units that are not wounded, it may add 2 dice to the attack roll. If it does, after the attack is resolved, each allied unit within range 2 of the defender, except the attacking unit, gains strain.
This is a weird one. I think Hondo's good business is his true identity, but this is cool because you can just add 2 dice randomly at the cost of a strain, right?
Yes. So that's, I think, where the biggest critique with Hondo lies, is its identity is very complicated. And it's not mechanically complicated. It's complicated in the sense of when are you going to choose to use it? Now, again, in layman's terms, let's say I'm attacking a point and Jesse has a clone trooper on it. And let's say I have Lord Maul, who is a scoundrel, with some super commandos who are scoundrels as well. And they're all on the point, right? I can make an attack with Lord Maul. And if that clone trooper is engaged with one of those super commandos, and that super commando is not wounded, Maul can add 2 dice. Now, maybe Maul's not the best example because Maul really doesn't need dice, but these are the first examples that came to my mind.
Yeah.
If you decide to add those 2 dice after the attack is resolved, regardless of the outcome, both super commandos, if they're within range 2 of the defender, which they are in this example, would gain strain. So the unit would gain strain, whereas Maul wouldn't. This is the question you have to ask yourself when you play and use this identity, is it worth adding two dice to strain one of my characters? And the answer could be yes, right?
Yeah.
The answer could very well be yes, because this does not apply just to melee attacks. This applies to ranged attacks as well, right?
Which is fascinating. That's the part that gets around like us doing the one-to-one comparison with like Vader identity or something, right? Now, what I do like about this is if you set up things right, it's only going to affect one unit of yours, right? So in that situation, just the Mandalorian Super Commandos. But as the game goes on, I think this identity might get worse because people typically pile on that struggle two and three on those center points in particular. And this just gets worse because you're just passing out strain to everybody, right? So early on, might be a high performance, right? Especially if your squad has recovers. I mean, look at the Mando box, which was just revealed. Tons of recovers for his squad. Tons of like defensive tech in there. Maybe there's something there, right? So maybe that's the lens you look through, or maybe you just don't care. Maybe you just set up supports and give them strain because the value of two more dice is better.
I think what you said a lot about having units that can recover is fairly powerful. Like Hondo Lumi might sound like a weird combo, but hey, if you're straining everything to get attacks across so that you can wound units so that you can utilize the dash of her ability, and then when your units get taken out, you can heal those strains off, that could be an interesting play and synergy that you could create. Another example, I think, which is the one that I used when I played my game with Hondo recently, is there was a scenario where it's like, oh, if I kill your character, I win the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So what did I do? Right? That's just good business. I inspiring stories. Moved my weak way to the point. So they're contesting. And then I just got two extra dice on my attack and I got the kill, which was awesome. So you can win out, you can close out struggles and you can close out games with this ability. But I think Jesse's absolutely right and that you must use it very sparingly because on a lot of these maps, especially Sabotage and, you know, Never Tell Me the Odds, points will get really congested, extremely congested. And it's like, how do we avoid debilitating a majority of my team? Especially if you're playing the way that AMG wants us to play with having very dense boards, right? Because this isn't a phenomenon that you see often online where you have four or five characters on one point. It happens, but...
It happens, yeah.
In person, at Adepticon, it happened quite a bit because the nature of the way these points were sitting on pieces of terrain, right?
I love it, yes.
So think about that, which I think is super fascinating because... And this might be a small side tangent, but I think Adepticon really changed the way I think about Star Wars Shatterpoint. Because now I know what I'm supposed to be playing on, right?
Yeah, what AMG wants the game to look like, right? And the way we should reflect that going forward. And more terrain is a way to go. And more terrain also gives more credence to these range shots, Saman. And I think that was the coolest shout out you had of this section is this works with range shots, which is new to the game, unusual, and also stacks. If you have any sort of character that gets consistent range shots off or characters that can modify dice or characters that can like things coming up with like with Bad Batch and stuff where you get additional hits. When you add more dice, those chances go up as well, right? And so you can also pair Hondo with situations where maybe Maul doesn't need more dice, but Maul with more dice is just maybe that guaranteed three or four spots where he wants to be on his tree. And so fair what's fair. Sorry, supports. You're getting hurt until you let my primaries and secondaries get through their trees, maybe.
If you ever want to roll so many dice where you might break the record of attack dice you've ever rolled, pair this identity with a Maul with at least one injured token and significant amounts of damage.
Love it.
And focus before you make the attack with Maul and just roll as many dice as you'd like.
Exciting. The possibilities are definitely endless with Hondo, and that's kind of how his card is. It's a blank slate. It's a blank canvas for you to play with. But we got to figure out how he fights him on with his stance cards because there's a piece of this puzzle we don't know yet.
Well, we're going to start with Clever Captain, which has a range 4, 7 dice attack profile and a melee 5 dice attack profile with 5 and 5 on defense for both range and melee. We're going to take a look at his defensive expertise, Wily Survivor. On a 1, you can turn a crit to a fail. On a 2, you get a block and you turn a crit to a fail. And on 3+, you get 2 blocks turning a crit to a fail. I find this to be quite interesting because a crit to a fail on 1 is like real swingy, you know?
Yeah. The lore on this is awesome. He's just getting lucky.
That's it.
It's great. This is stuff we typically see on a Jedi. Obviously, though, he has less blocks,
with the expertise, but the fact that he's getting the crit to fail on all of his results, it's good stuff.
It's very fascinating, and I don't mind this, actually. I mean, obviously, there are going to be times your opponent just rolls like 3 hits or 4 hits, no crits.
Yeah, sure.
This means nothing. But on those bigger moments where, you know, on 6 dice, I think you should roll 1 crit, so that helps, right? And so you can maybe take away a Vader or a Maul who gets a lot of benefit from rolling those crits because of their trees are so powerful, which I think is quite fascinating. One thing I want to point out on Hondo is if you look at his stance cards, you'll see that pick is actually reaching out of the silhouette, the circle. We have not seen that at all on any Shatterpoint card to my knowledge or to my recollection yet, which just adds the additional, I think this is intentional, where pick is maybe trying to reach for something to steal, right? Because they are pirates.
For sure.
And again, it's little touches like these where I think AMG really shows their genius and they shine, because whether this was intended or not, I think it is fantastic and really adds more character.
Oh, absolutely. They know the source material. The Hondo pose of him laughing with his arms down, that's straight out of the episode with Hondo versus Maul, right? And he's, I'm out of here. And he's laughing. He's like, I'm out. This is no longer profitable. And he just, it's funny to him because he's, I'm not dealing with 2 Dathomirian brothers coming at me. So they know the source material and they've chosen the spots. So nice call out with Pick Muckbuck, just creeping on the card a little bit.
Yeah. Which I love. I think it's a very nice touch. Moving over to his offensive expertise, we have his Electro Staff, which is 1-2, a crit, 3, a crit and a strike, 4+2 crits and a strike.
Respectable. He's sitting crits.
Yeah. It's nice.
I like it.
Hondo's Blaster is his ranged expertise, 1-3, a crit and a strike, 4, 2 crits and a strike, 5+2 crits, 2 strikes.
It's cool that he has a 5 result. You're being rewarded for that bad dice roll, right? We always talk about that where it's like, why certain characters do or do not have the expertise, and it's interesting, but his blaster is really consistent, Amon. I think what you want, obviously, is the one. The one's insane. Like, 2 results for 1, one of them being a crit, but obviously, the 3 expertise is not as good, right? But then you kind of break through that threshold, and it really just comes online with the 4 and 5.
Yeah, I think my ideal scenario when making a range attack is just 1 expertise.
Yeah, it's just too good. Yeah.
Because even at 4, 2 crits... and a strike isn't the best on 7 dice, right? But if you can get like 2 to 3 hits, maybe a natural crit, and then 1 expertise, and then the rest are fails, you're happy with that, because that what leads to is, you know, 3 to 4 hits and 2 crits. Pretty good. And his tree isn't very deep. I mean,
no,
you're only going 5 through, so let's talk about it. You're starting with a pin and a damage. Again, this works pretty well with what have we here, because he also will add that pin, so a decent combo in some need situations where you could maybe stack an additional damage or finish a character off. From here, we talked about recovers, right? With what's fair, his identity. So you can either go up and take 2 recovers, or you can go down and reposition in a damage. Good options. Both great in whatever scenario you're trying to do business in. Both of these points now converge to a shove and 2 damage. So if you're getting 3 results with Hondo, which the average is 2.5, but with his expertise, maybe I think you can reliably count on 3.
Yep.
You're either doing 4 damage, a reposition, a shove, and a pin, or 3 damage with a pin, 2 recovers, and a shove. Pretty good either way.
Yeah, it's very like he is the captain. He's supporting his troops, right?
And I'm he's shooting
from the back. Yeah, that is Hondo.
Actually, I could definitely see Hondo doing that in a show, which
100%.
Missed opportunity, Star Wars. From here, after the shove, you have 2 options in terms of a condition. You can either disarm him and go up with a damage, or go down and expose your opponent with a condition. And then you culminate the tree in a shove and a recover and a damage. So not a very damage heavy tree.
No.
The main goal, of course, is conditions, maybe recovers. Maybe you just really want that reposition to where you can make a advance reposition dash, which can make Hondo very mobile on the battlefield. Or if you get a full tree, then great. You can do a little bit more than that.
No, I think it's a great stance. I think it's just you're sitting back, you're shooting from a safe spot and putting out conditions and heals for your allies and throwing some shoves in while you're at it. It's always really good. And we know the debilitating combo of pinned right out the gate, quickly followed by a shove, how good that is and how that kind of sets up future turns and slows your opponent down on their next turns. So I like the stance a lot, Amon. I think his blaster is pretty, though not lethal, consistent.
I would agree. Let's move on to Pugnacious Pirate, which is his other stance here. Again, 5/5 on defense, 7 with a range 4, and in melee, 5 dice. So exact same profile as the other stance in terms of the core characteristics. Where the difference becomes is Wily Survivor changes a little bit on the defensive expertise. 1 is 1 block, 2-3, a block, recover, and a jump. 4+2 blocks, a recover, and a jump. Pretty solid.
Yeah, it's looking very Cad Bane-esque in that way, and we know how good that is. The jumps are pretty amazing because I presume you're going to want this stance when you're dug in and you want to stay on points, and that's just another layer of staying on points is having jumps. And don't forget, with that recover, if they pin you, you can recover and then jump back on the point, right? So you can even get around the dreaded pin situation when you can't get back on points after being shoved.
100%. I think you should not sleep on defensive expertise jumps. They're huge.
Absolutely huge.
Worst case scenario, they're clearing a pin.
Mm-hmm.
Moving over to his offensive expertise, a little bit change here. The Electro Staff on 1-2 gets a strike and a crit. 3-4 gets 2 crits and a strike. 5+, 2 crits, 2 strikes. That's a pretty mean expertise chart.
That's a mean 5+, too. You'll take that. Yeah, he means business in melee on this side. I love that, like, we're seeing Hondo's lore through the card here and just how good he is in combat, because it's something we didn't touch on a huge amount because we're talking about him as a character more, but he's highly trained and he's older, as Amon said. So he's been around the block. He knows how to fight. He also knows how to get out of situations. So I love that we're seeing his blaster on the captain's side and his electro staff on the side being consistent and lethal.
1000%. Now he does lose a little bit of that offensive output on his ranged expertise with his Hondo's blaster only going 1-2, a strike, 3, crit and a strike, 4+, crit strike damage. But I guess you can say that this is his, quote, melee side due to the expertise.
Definitely. Yeah.
Even though he has 2 more dice at range on both stances.
It's interesting and cool that they did a character where his raw dice are the same, but it is all about that expertise, right? To differentiate the ranged and melee sides, respectively. So, and yeah, don't let him hit you with the Electro Staff in this side.
Well, let's see what happens if and when he does hit you with the Electro Staff. So this is a wild tree.
Yeah.
And I think this makes total sense because this is Hondo just winging it as he goes. He is creating options and avenues for himself. And again, it's a very hard tree to process. But really, I saw a very funny meme with Cabby Lame just putting his hands out like, what is this? You know, like,
yeah.
And it's pretty funny. So.
Well, it's also like for our show, Amon, we're in audio format, so it's also hard to describe to the listeners if you were to just look at it initially, but we're going to try to just explain it simply to you and help you understand the chaos of this tree.
Exactly. So there are 2 starting points. There is a shove and a damage, and below it, there is 2 damage. What is extremely interesting is that from here, you can either continue down the next step in a horizontal fashion, or you can just crisscross all over the place. So yep. Just to give you an example of how wild this tree is, again, you start with a shove and a damage, and the bottom one is 2 damage. Try to visualize that. Then if we look over on the top row, after the shove and the damage is an expose and the damage, and after the 2 damage on the bottom, there's a shove and a damage. These are the many myriad ways that you can go about resolving 2 successes. You can either do traditionally shove damage, expose damage. You can do 2 damage, shove damage. You can do shove damage, shove damage. You can do 2 damage, expose damage. So you can crisscross or you can keep going down the tree. Now from there, once you've made it to the second step of the tree, you can now again crisscross, right? So you don't have the option to continue going straight anymore. You have to divert and move on the fly and change your plans as you go, as Hondo would in combat.
Yes.
And just wing it. So once we get to the expose and the damage, you have to crisscross down to take 2 damage. And if you had taken the shove and a damage, you have to crisscross up to the pin and damage. Now, if we continue on with the pin and damage, you can crisscross down to 2 damage, whereas the previous damage, you would crisscross up to the shove and the damage. And then from there, that shove and the damage leads you to a climb in 2 damage, whereas the 2 damage takes you to a shove and a damage. So it's very interesting because both trees offer you to do the same thing, really.
Yeah. The damage results end up differently if you want to talk about the tree as a whole, right? But only slightly. It's more like, as you said, Amon, where do you want to get to? Do you want that pinned on the tree? What's the path you got to snake to get to that pinned? And I think you're looking forward and planning the way you're going, right? trying to get to that forward point where you're going to eventually end up. So maybe you work backwards on this tree a lot.
I agree. I mean, like, but it's really fascinating because, like, I can just go shove, shove, pin, two damage, shove, but also I can do shove, expose, two damage, shove, climb, two damage, right? So you can still get repeated results while still flirting around on how you move around the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it hurts my brain to look at it. And I'm probably sure it hurts your brain to listen to me attempting to explain that, especially if you're driving or doing something else like painting while you're listening. But just take a look at the stance card when you can, and it'll all make sense.
Couple notable mentions. If you do go down the tree a certain path, you can end up on 8 damage total. So that can remove something that's got 8 remaining. But there's other paths that give you 6 or 7 damage. And I say other paths because there's multiple. So there is one path to get the 8, but 6 or 7 are probably getting more of the average if you complete the tree a certain way. But you can make it happen any way you want, right? That's what's crazy. I don't know. I think this is going to take time to learn as the Hondo player. You have to get reps and get familiar with this because this will also eat some of your game time too a little bit because incremental game time adds up.
Yep. Another lesson learned from the recent Adepticon experience, right? So,
yep. So I think this tree is fascinating though. Like it's all good stuff.
Well, that's going to be it for Hondo specifically. Again, Hondo seems like a very robust character in the terms of opportunity and the options he brings. He kind of plugs and plays in a lot of great places. He does have a limit in terms of the options he can bring alongside him, and we'll explore that in just a moment. But overall, I think Jesse summarized it pretty well. That's just good business is probably what you're trying to take advantage of the most. And fair, what's fair, his identity is more of a selectively use it when you know that it's going to be more fair for you than to your opponent.
Yeah. And you've got options, right? And you can look at the paths it would go. And as Amon said, that momentum is going to win you the struggle. You're going for it, right? You're going to go for it. But early on, if it's just getting you little bits of incremental dice, you might not do it. So options are there. And that's what Hondo is. He's a options for your team, options for the player, and really rewarding if you put a lot of time in with him. But we got to move on, Amon, and talk about lore on Guarm and the Weak Way Pirates, which we'll do together because they are kind of one and the same. And Guarm was important in Hondo's story because he was a male Weak Way Pirate who's the second in command of the Onaka gang on the pirate ship. He's the captain that takes over when the captain steps out, things like that. And he's a pretty simple guy, Guarm. He likes money. He likes infamy like Hondo, but Guarm actually is aligned more, I would say, dark side than Hondo. A little bit. He doesn't have that call to the light that Hondo does. And he was really good at shooting from range. We see that a lot with his cycler rifle. And he also was kind of hard on his troops sometimes, especially when Hondo wasn't around. He was the guy that was like a little rougher. Yeah. When he had power, think of that second in command person who's always under the first in command person. And when the first in command person steps out or is needed elsewhere, a little bit of a power trip they get, maybe kind of a Megatron and Starscream scenario where it's, oh, this is my moment. I'm in charge now. And it's like, well, you are for a bit, right? And Guarm's just kind of a standard Weak Way pirate guy. I mean, there's not a ton of lore on him, especially in canon. He was pretty loyal to Hondo. And I think something interesting about Guarm that's important is the Onaka gang was dismantled later, but eventually Guarm picked it back up and had his own gang after that. And he got his own moment during the Rebellion era when Hondo was no longer the leader of the Onaka gang, but we don't know much on that from the canon point of view. But he did start his own pirate gang and do that. And that leads us to the Onaka gang, which is also known as Hondo's gang or the Weak Way Pirates. They just had an infamy of the Weak Way Pirates, the most famous Weak Way Pirates out there. And that's who we're talking about, these Weak Way Pirate supports. The group of pirates led by Hondo Onaka, and of course, Guarm was second in command. And they were on the Outer Rim planet of Florim, like we discussed in Clone Wars, mainly. And they did have the moniker of Weak Way Pirates, which I think is important because most of them were Weak Way. But there were a couple other races represented in this gang. Nikto, Bith, Jawa, Ishitib, and I think others fluctuated in and out because these guys are mercenaries. People come and go, right? People come, make money, they leave. But the bulk of the group was the Weak Way Pirates who worked directly under Hondo and Guarm. What more is to say? They're pirates in the Star Wars galaxy. They'll make a quick buck when they can. They can be really ruthless when they can. They can also be cowardly and retreat
when they need to, right? They're kind of multifaceted in that way. And Guarm's kind of the face of that group under Hondo.
Yeah, I would say that like Guarm and the Weakways and even Hondo, they're opportunists, right? Like they just do whatever is in their best interest to survive and make profits. Again, yep. That's just good business. I will say, while Weakways in general had a scoundrel tag, for lack of a better term, imprinted on them, the Weakways that served under Hondo were particularly loyal to him.
Yeah.
As Hondo represented this cool figure in the Weakway society of someone who was able to rise above and help other Weakways to gain prosperity and wealth. And I will say, you mentioned the Starscream and Megatron stuff. Well, I think that's fair to a certain degree. I do want to point out that Guarm was famously loyal to Hondo and always had Hondo's back. I don't think there was ever a time where, as a viewer at least, I ever saw Guarm ever even think about betraying Hondo. I mean, in fact, when Hondo was captured by General Grievous, Ahsoka convinced Guarm to help free Hondo, and Guarm was all in on that when he could have left and taken over the entire gang himself. So another example as well is when, I think there's this scene in the Clone Wars where Anakin has Hondo in a tough situation, and Guarm goes out of his way to save Hondo and then just leave empty-handed, right, from the planet itself where they're attempting to extort some farmers and things like that. So Guarm is a loyal homie. Just want to put it like that.
Yeah, I wasn't referencing Starscream's fleeting allegiance. It was more just like when Starscream gets in charge, when Megatron's away, kind of how he gets a little bit more of an ego, and the way he treats the troops is a little different from when Megatron's around, because now the troops are under his command.
Sure.
That's kind of what Guarm shows when Hondo's away. Not necessarily as a negative side, it's just a personality flaw he has, right? Like, oh, I'm in charge now. But yeah, absolutely loyal to Hondo for sure.
Fair enough. I think that makes total sense. I will also say that Guarm is a little, he's not the brightest tool in the shed. Let's just say that, because I think when the younglings were sneaking through his ship, he never once thought to check the vents, which, come on, guys. That's the first thing we check nowadays, the vents.
They're in the walls.
Let's talk about Guarm and the Weakway Pirates and Star Wars Shatterpoint then. Come on.
Guarm is a secondary unit, costs 3 points. He has a stamina of 8, durability of 2, with the tags Mercenary, Scoundrel, and Weakway. So 8 is fine if your primary is 9. 3 points is really interesting because that opens up a lot of opportunities in regards to where Guarm can be placed given his ambiguity in terms of tags, right?
Absolutely gives you options, Amon, and just it seems thus far in the game that the secondary spot, 3 is the least represented cost, right? So the fact that's a thing, he already has a unique way to fit into teams and maybe help you crunch your points, right? When it's the least common that we've seen in the secondary spot point.
I think you're absolutely right, Jesse. It's certainly a way in which you can get creative when crunching the numbers, right? Especially when you look at characters like Mace Windu, who have to take what the community has now dubbed the Pawns Tax, right? The
Pawns Tax, yes.
Right, which is like one of the worst draws you can get in that whole roster. And, you know, maybe Guarm can be that replacement, maybe not, but let's take a look at Guarm and see what he's doing for any team that he's a part of, but of course, Weakways as well. And we're going to start with his tactics ability, Get Moving You Dogs. At the start of this unit's activation, choose another allied Weakway unit within range 4. Each character in the chosen unit may dash.
I like this. This is obviously really strong if you're running him with Weakway Pirates and Hondo, because that's a lot of movement for someone only costs 3, but the inverse of that is it only works with Weakways.
Yes, certainly. And I think it's an interesting choice considering all the Weakways are scoundrels. I think it would have been really cool to maybe have this work for any scoundrel unit that is allied. Could have opened up a whole facet of things that could be done. But given the fact that this specifically states Weakway, I think we can very quickly realize, especially because 2 of the abilities were for a Weakway, that he's not going to be the Pawns replacement you were hopefully looking for. And this is going to be a secondary that is almost entirely always played with Hondo and or the Weakway Pirates.
For sure. Yeah. Which is a completely fine place for him to be.
Indeed. The next active ability is called Spotchka Rations, which costs a force. Choose an allied scoundrel unit. There it is. Within range 3, one character in the chosen unit may recover twice.
Now, this I like a lot. And obviously, this has synergy with Hondo's identity, getting rid of those pesky strains, possibly, that you dealt out to your teammates to get more dice. But also, it's future-proofing, right? He can use this on scoundrels, right? And it's a lot more open.
Certainly. Yeah, I think this is probably the most interesting ability to me on his card as a whole. if only because to recover on tap is pretty nice. Range 3 is fairly fair in terms of positioning. And you're right, synergizes well with Hondo's identity. Next ability is an innate ability called Pack Hunter. When a character in this unit makes a melee attack targeting an enemy character that is engaged with another allied weak weight character, it adds 2 dice to the attack roll.
Yep, something we've been seeing since the core set. Love it. It encourages you to play characters with this Pack Hunter that have certain tag needs met, play that, and get benefits out of it. I don't think Gwarm's really a melee character when I think of him in lore, but I like that he has the option to punch up, literally, if his guys are nearby.
Absolutely. I mean, with Hondo's identity, that's 4 extra dice, right? You're going from 5, peeking ahead a little bit, to 9. And that's with just one person's identity. If you have someone else's identity influencing attack dice at all, it can get pretty high.
I like that a lot.
Now, we talked about the melee side of Gwarm. Well, let's talk about the range side with his innate ability, I've Got You in My Sights. Characters in this unit have Sharpshooter 2. When a character in this unit makes a ranged attack action, the target does not benefit from cover. After this unit makes a focus action, it gains Hunker.
Yeah, we first saw it on Gar, right? And to see it return, very cool. He's looking more and more like the budget Gar.
Gar certainly has the benefit in that he can focus quite regularly.
Yes.
Whereas Gwarm, it's very intended. I'm going to make a focus action and then shoot you.
That's my turn.
With 8 dice, potentially 10 dice. If I use Hondo's identity.
Yep.
And that is my turn. Exactly.
He should have that restriction because he is cheaper, right? But
he also doesn't have a jetpack.
Doesn't have a jetpack. Doesn't have Mandalorians are stronger together. But I do love this last little bit where he gains Hunker as well. So it does give him some economy, right? His focuses are worth it, essentially, because you're turning on Sharpshooter and you're giving yourself a Hunker.
So let's move on to Gwarm's stance card here. So it's called Enforcer. He's got a range 5 attack. 5-5 on both offense, 5-5 on defense. Evasive is his defensive expertise. 1-1 block, 2-block and a climb, 3+, 2-block and a climb. Definitely giving him that sniper vibe here where he's just trying to get onto points and I've got you in my sights.
Absolutely. This is fine. I like these defensive expertise for, you know, you'll take one, you know, and just all incrementally getting better, right? But keep in mind too, these climbs, they could make the difference getting back on a point. A climb is always just a dash to any elevation, so you can treat it like a dash as well. So very cool, honestly.
Agreed. Now looking over to his melee expertise, let's start with the long rifle because this is probably where we're going to see some of that make sense a little bit with Gwarm. 1-1 crit, 2-3, 2 crits, 4+3 crits. Man, I wish they would have made that 4+4 crits just to hit that bullseye, you know?
Oh, that'd be really cool. Yeah. But this is solid for sure.
Yeah. He's got a crit sniper.
Yeah. He's critting and he's finding crits, especially if he's buffing up his dice in some way through the sharpshooter, right?
Indeed. Now, if Gwarm is ever in melee due to Pack Hunter, he can be rolling 7 dice as well. And his melee expertise with his pirate blade, 1-2 a crit, 3 crit strike, 4+ a crit and 2 strikes.
Yeah. I see the downgrade here, right? But once again, he's no slouch in combat. This guy. For 3 cost, I mean, he's converting dice at a pretty good rate.
It's not bad.
Nope.
Well, let's go to his stance here. So he's got a very complicated stance as well, unfortunately, for you audio listeners out there. You can kind of tell that he's probably under command from Hondo to go with the flow and kind of make things happen and look for opportunities as things go. Though I think at a certain point, maybe he finds his rhythm and does what he wants to do. So the top path here, there are 2 starting points. We're going to start with the pin in the damage, and this one actually allows you to go all the way straight through. Now, there are ways in which you can deviate, of course. Gwarm has 2 starting places on his stance tree. Now, you can either start with a pin and a damage or 2 damage. This one's interesting because he's probably under Hondo's command in that he is making it up as he goes, going with the flow, looking for opportunities. So there is some complication here in terms of the zigzagging. However, there are some straight shots he can take as well when Gwarm is maybe able to act independently. So we'll start with the pin and the damage, and we'll go straight across to an expose and a damage, 2 damage, a shove and a damage, and a reposition and a damage. Now, there are ways where you can veer off course. So if you start with that pin and a damage, you can actually zigzag down to a shove and a damage, and then you have to zigzag back up to 2 damage, and then you have to follow that tree, which we mentioned earlier, which is then the shove and the damage and the reposition and the damage. So Gwarm's immediately is a little bit more limiting because you can't flip back and forth as much as Hondo. Now, if you start with the 2 damage instead, you have to go up to the expose and the damage.
Yeah,
but then what that enables you to do is access the bottom half of the tree, which is then a shove and a damage, which leads to 2 damage. And then from there, you can zag up to the reposition and the damage that we mentioned earlier. Actually, that's all you can do. And from there, you have to zag up to the reposition and the damage we mentioned earlier. Now, there is one spot we haven't talked about yet on the bottom tree, which is the recover and a damage. And that is only accessible from the second to last step on the top path, which is a shove and a damage. So honestly, again, listener, that probably didn't really make much sense to you. But hopefully, as we simplify some of the play patterns and some of the options you can do, it can help you visualize that a little bit. But these are supposed to be complicated by design. And unfortunately, audio format isn't the best way to visualize the stances.
Yeah. Some big takeaways are he's got pinned double shove as one of his options. That's really important. He's also got topping out at 6 damage as an option and topping out at 7 damage as an option. Meanwhile, sneaking in an expose and a recover if you want to get him, right? And I think most important of all, Amon, is ending at the culmination with this reposition because, as we've already alluded to, he's a character with very little mobility. He doesn't even move himself, very similar to Pons. He moves allies. So that reposition is going to be really huge for him to maybe get movement that he otherwise just can't get innately that's on his card. So maybe ending the tree and the reposition is going to be really impactful. But you got to get 5 steps down a tree.
And in some tight moments, you're going to want to maybe do that sharpshooter focus action to get to where you need to go on that tree. But that's going to be it for Guarm. So I think we can, again, ultimately rule that Guarm works best with weak ways. There is slight scoundrel synergy there if you just want to throw in a 3-point if you need to. But I don't think he's going to be replacing Grief in those Bounty Hunter Scoundrel lists. And he's not going to be replacing Pons or the Imperial Stormtrooper Sergeant in those Empire and Republic lists. So I think if you're going to take Guarm, you're probably taking him with, as Jesse said, the Weakway Pirates and with Hondo.
He does give you one option that was not otherwise in the game up to this point. But, you know, it's one of the situations. What list are you trying to build? He is Clone Wars, so you can bring him with Dooku. And now Dooku can bring a support that costs 4, right? And that opens up doors for Dooku to bring the B2s or other things like that. But in that case, you better have Jango in your other squad.
Yeah, I never would ever see a planet or a galaxy or a world in which you're going to take Guarm Magna Guards, right? I get it. Maybe if you want to put the Magna Guards with Grievous or Vader for sure, but
it'd be Dooku, Guarm, B2s, and then the other character on your squad would have the Magna Guards and give them flexibility too. It's weird because now the other person's taking a 3 cost, right? And the Dooku's got a 3 cost, and you're spreading the openings, right? But yeah, it would just depend on the particular list.
Indeed. Well, let's now move on to the Weakway Pirates. Jesse's already covered the lore on these fine folk, so we'll just move on to their Shatterpoint card. Supporting unit that costs 4 points. They are 8 stamina, 2 wounds, 2 durability with the tags Mercenary, Scoundrel, Trooper, and Weakway.
A lot of tags. I like that. 8. I mean, pretty normal for supports. Not a ton outside of the box here, Mon, so far for just a support. The standout, obviously, is the Weakway tag. We now know how that works with reading Hondo and Guarm. Everything else is pretty much like a standard support.
Yes, absolutely. The only unique tag is Weakway. I think Weakway Pirates, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, in a bit, but they probably have a lot of longevity in terms of as more Scoundrels Mercenaries are released. Maybe they can slot into those. But let's talk about their specific ability. So their active ability is Raiding Party. Cost of 4. Each character in this unit may climb.
That's really good because they've got a dash, giving them mobility, but it can end at any elevation. So they got a jetpack, right? Their version of jetpack. It's obviously them climbing. And pirates love to climb up on ships and stuff in our lore. And I love these guys just getting where they need to be.
Indeed. The only difference with the jump is that they cannot do this out of combat. So if they are engaged,
very important,
no raiding party. Now they have 2 innate abilities. The first one is Greedy. When a wily character in this unit is contesting one or more active objectives, it has Steadfast. Not bad.
Super cool. Super cool. Not bad at all. Yeah. Makes them really sticky, which is what they want to be on points. So I like it.
I like it. Lastly, Pack Hunter. When a character in this unit makes a melee attack targeting an enemy unit that is engaged with another allied weakway character, it adds 2 dice to the attack roll. This is the same ability that Guarm has.
Absolutely. And, you know, a little bit of a spoiler on the stance card, but their expertise is slightly better on melee, so it benefits them. to hit in melee in that regard. So this is definitely helping them get through their tree.
Indeed. Well, let's move on to their stance card itself, which is called Raider. We've got a range 4 attack with 5 dice, and you've got a melee attack with 5 dice. 4 and 4 on defense, though. Little low.
Yeah, it is a little low. That's some clone numbers.
Yeah, especially for like a 4-point unit. I'm just thinking like 4 and 4. Oof.
Imagine 4 and 3.
Yes, Jesse, we know. Evasive is their defensive expertise. 1 to 2 a block, 3+ a block and a climb.
These are clone stats.
Doesn't seem very evasive to me.
No. But I do like the climb. That is nice because once again, worst case scenario is just removing a pen. Best case scenario, you're just getting right back on that point, right? If you survived. So that's actually huge. That's huge.
Correct. Moving on to their offensive expertise, we'll start with the Pirate Blade. 1 to 2, 2 strikes, 3+, 2 strikes and a damage.
This is the better one of the two.
It is. And I think you just probably want to roll no more than 2 because it just equates directly to 2 strikes. I don't think you want to give up a strike or a crit for a damage, although it is certainly better than a fail, right? So,
for sure. And so 1 for 2 is great. If you get the coveted one, you know, it's like, oh, I got 2 results for one die result, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's good. The low end of it is good. It gets rough really quickly, right? I'm on
high floor, low ceiling. Ceiling almost hitting the floor, which again means you really just want to roll low on expertise, which makes me wonder how much you really want to tap into their extra dice because,
yeah.
I mean, I guess the math, I think it's ultimately worse, but it's still better than, actually, no, at a certain point, it's probably the same as rolling fails. So things to think about. Weakway Blaster, ranged expertise, 1 to 2, a strike, 3+, a strike and a damage. Again, quite a low floor and a low ceiling as well. Ideally, you don't want to roll more than 1 expertise whenever you're attacking with the Weakway Pirates. Easier said than done, especially since you have no control over it, but hoping that you roll low on expertise when you make attack actions with this unit.
Absolutely.
Regardless, they start with the coveted shove and a damage, which is what we like.
Respect it. Acknowledge it. Be aware of it. Yeah, this is really good. This is a great start from their stance card tree.
Best thing I've seen thus far, which I'm pretty happy to see. From there, we move to 2 damage, and then you have 2 choices. And this follows a very traditional path rather than the ingenuity, let's say, that Hondo and Guam bring to their stance trees. After the 2 damage, you can either go down, and if you do so, you get a pin and a damage followed by a shove and a damage, or you can go straight after that 2 damage and get a reposition and a damage and an expose and a damage. Either way, they culminate in a recover and a damage. So if you get 5 successes through, you're getting your full tree, which can deal a maximum of 6 damage with a reposition and a shove and a recover. Or you can choose to take 2 shoves and a pin.
Yeah, no, 6 damage on a support, very respectable. And they've got a nice slew of conditions here they can put out. And once again, they're not a super mobile unit, so maybe that reposition on 3 is really helping them, right? Get where they want to be and get that steadfast online, right? Get to an active point. I like their tree, Haman, for how simple they are.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, they're fragile.
I'm glad you brought that up because that is the concern I have with the box as a whole. Hondo, Guarm, Weakway Pirates, all 8, with Hondo being 9, which is the lowest the primaries have been thus far. If we look at their defensive stats, the Weakway Pirates are 4 and 4. Guarm is 5 and 5. Hondo is 5 and 5. Doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in terms of defensive spikes that can help protect you. Now, defensively, Hondo has pretty decent expertise, but Guarm, yeah, the Weakway Pirates don't, right? And so I think the criticism that this box has received thus far, which you have to take with a bag of salt, given the fact that it's just hot takes from a lot of random people on the internet, is the fact that Guarm and the Weakway Pirates have very little staying power, and they're not really doing much, which I think is valid to a certain extent, because on paper, quite literally, it doesn't seem like they're doing a lot. Like, Hondo, to me, is the most interesting piece of this box, and that's why I'm really into it, is because I think Hondo is just going to do what CAD does. They're just going to put Hondo as a face on some sort of other affiliation shell, and you're going to have a very, very specific game plan on how you're going to maximize Hondo and why he's worth it over another primary who comes from that tag or affiliation, right? That, I think, to me, merits the most discussion, time, energy, and strategy and theory crafting, because I think people can do really, really cool things with Hondo, but My concern, which again is off very limited number of games, is Hondo might fall to the same issues that Maze has ultimately fallen to lately, which is you got to pay a Pawns tax. With Hondo, do you have to pay the Guarm tax?
Mm-hmm. That's the question, right? That is the question. Or is it just like you said, Amon, am I playing Separatists? Am I bringing Kraken and Magnus with Hondo? And my other list is a Separatist facing list. And I'm not saying Separatists is the best way to go with it. I'm just saying the example you gave, that's one example of many where you can just slot them into other archetypes and tag synergy lists. And I think as of this moment, that's probably his spot. But what's cool about this box is the game grows, as the Scoundrel tag grows, as the Bounty Hunter tag grows, as the game just gets wider with objectives where Hondo can even do better. Hondo can be the face of a lot of lists, right? And he can work with a lot of characters, just like his lore.
Indeed. And that is exactly what I think AMG was trying to do. And I think they have accomplished that with Hondo himself. There is a part of me that kind of wishes Guarm was 4 and had the stats to back that up with Hondo being 4 as well, just because it would slot Hondo more into some interesting opportunities. But AMG did mention that they played a lot of Hondo CAD in their testing.
Yeah.
And that seemed to do a lot of fun and cool things for people who are more competitively minded. Fun doesn't always equal good. So certain things to think about. But ultimately, if your goal is to get your two favorite bounty hunters from the Clone Wars onto the tabletop and do a lot of cool and fun things with them, I think you can certainly do that with Hondo CAD. I think you can even pair Hondo with other Scoundrel characters. You know, Jesse mentioned Maul earlier, although Maul and Hondo have a more contentious relationship in the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're not above working with one another if they have to, right? So you can, if there's a lore nut in you that needs to make sure that everything works lore-wise, I think Hondo has a lot of options. And who knows, with the introduction of We Don't Need Their Scum squad pack coming out in the future and some other bounty hunters like This Is the Way and the Mandalorians, there may be more bounty hunter Scoundrel synergies that you can utilize that could open up Hondo and perhaps even Guarm and the Weak Way Pirates to becoming a larger sum than their individual parts.
I absolutely agree. And I also think the lore on that would be super cool because obviously Hondo's worked alongside a lot of those bounty hunters. So if we can make that happen as a lore win and as a mechanics win, we're there. But also, he's no stranger working with like the Rebels and the Empire and other eras, right? So I think as the game continues to expand, Hondo's just going to expand where he can go, right? So the biggest limiting factor he has is that, as we've been harping on, 7. It's the 7, right? So as the game grows, when we get more threes, and when I mean threes, I mean nebulous threes, threes that can be a support or a secondary, Hondo gets easier to play, Hondo gets easier to slot in, Hondo gets more life. So I think as the game grows, he just grows innately, which is great because he has worked with everyone in the Star Wars universe in some capacity, even whether or not they know it or not. He's worked with them.
I mean, Hondo has claimed that he has been all over the galaxy and many villainous scum are dear friends of his. That sums it up best. Now, if you're looking at this box as a whole and you maybe don't know if it brings a smile to your face or if you're maybe frowning a little bit, I'm going to give you a piece of advice that Hondo told me in Pirate's Price. Sometimes a smile is all you need to turn a frown upside down.
So perfect. Absolutely perfect. Well, get on the level with Hondo, right? And we mentioned him earlier, and I mentioned him now while we're here. Jim Cummings, the actor who plays Hondo. What a legend. I know I say this all the time on the show because there's so many legends that play characters in Star Wars. This guy, been voice acting like going on 50 years. He is so many amazing characters in Disney and other animated series. Hondo is just like the tip of the iceberg. It is insane. And if you play video games, he's all over the place in video games as well.
He is.
But I mean, who's someone who's a dad? I hear his voice all the time. I mean, most notably, he's the single person in modern day who plays Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. That's a big deal. He also plays Pete from Goof Troop in a Goofy movie, who's Goofy's, you know, neighbor and friend. You can hear the Hondo there. But I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, Looney Tunes, Disney. He's even in Marvel properties. So the fact that he's brought even more life to a modern character on top of being so many iconic Disney characters just shows his prowess. And I think Hondo is a legend, and they've even built entire Disney parks around his exploits and this actor, Jim Cummings, playing Hondo at the Disney parks as well. I mean, he's all over the place. And if you've rode that Millennium Falcon ride, Smuggler's Run, Hondo's all over it in animatronic form. He's talking to you while you're flying the Falcon. It's so great. and I recommend it.
Awesome. Well, I think that's going to be it for Hondo and his box.
Get some pirate action on the table, have fun with this box, and report back to us. And the places you can reach out to us, we got several online. Most important of all is our Patreon, where we're supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Hello There patron by going to patreon.com/HelloThereCast. You can find us online everywhere on the same space at Hello There Cast. That's X, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. Email us at HelloThereCast@gmail.com if you need to email us. And leave us reviews on your podcast platform of choice while you're listening. Just thumb over and give us 5 stars. It means a lot.
Absolutely. I want to give a huge shout out to Lofiel for our show's music as well.
And last but not least, you can find me and Mon several places online. You can find me, Jesse, on X, Instagram, Longshanks, Discord, all the same place, at Jesse Aiken, JESSEAKIN. And check out my other podcast, Fury's Finest, about everything Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. We're doing a lot of mutant stuff lately. And if you like mutants, come check it out. Amon, where can everyone find you?
You can find me everywhere with my name, Amon. That's me on most places, some form of it at least. And you can check me out on my show, Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. We've got a lot of new releases as well on the Underworlds front. And George, our newest patron and my co-host, just won Adepticon for Warhammer Underworlds. So if you want to listen to his exploits, check us out there.
Absolutely. Well, this was a fun episode to do with you guys, and we hope you enjoyed this time in our pirate sphere. And I'm sure we'll return to Hondo in the future, Mon, in some capacity, whether it's Star Wars lore discussions or Shatterpoint list building, whatever it is. He's a big character in Star Wars right now.
Well, Jesse, that would just mean it's good business.
May the Force be with you.
So uncivilized.